This is Father Jacob Bertrand Jancic.
And this is Father Gregory Pine.
Welcome to Godsplaining. Thanks to all who support us. If you enjoy the show, please consider making a monthly donation on Patreon. Be sure to like and to subscribe to Godsplaining wherever you listen to your podcasts. Father Gregory, here we are. We start a lot of episodes that way. Here we are, as if we would be somewhere else recording a Godsplaining episode.
Yeah, but I think it like takes a little time to settle into any encounter. You're like, it's us. We're doing it. So I understand.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate the support of my like canned and predictable introduction to every Godsplaining episode. So how's it going? What's up? You survived Easter. You did Easter.
I did. I survived Easter. I did Easter. I was in Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, the capital of the free world. And as some people call it, or maybe called it, I don't know if anyone still calls it that. Regardless. And it was great. I was here at St. Dominic's, where I'm assigned in Southwest D.C. for the Triduum. And I was out for Mass, or I was out for, I guess, service on Friday and then Mass on Sunday. And I had a visitor in from Switzerland. So it was good, you know, kind of like curating the experience of Washington, D.C. and the church's liturgical life simultaneously. Now I'm just kind of like locked in for the last few weeks of the semester. So I teach at a homeschool co-op called the Dominican House of Studies. Just kidding. For all those listening, I'm just kidding. And so I've got some papers to grade and some exams to administer and then blah, 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 and thus and such. So, yeah, I look forward to wrapping up and then pushing on to the summer. How about you?
I was Easter here at the parish, St. Denis in New Hampshire. It was great. Holy Week started with 2 feet of snow on Palm Sunday. So that was awesome. And then it got warm during the week, and then it snowed during the octave again, which was also awesome. But Holy Week, Triduum, Easter, really excellent at the parish. Had a Dominican friend in visiting to help with some of the liturgy, with the liturgies, and that was great too. And it was really beautiful, super well attended. Choir did an excellent job. It was great. It was really nice. And then just getting back into the swing of things, kind of like approaching sacrament season here now at the parish, confirmations and first communions and first confessions. So we're just like doing the classic parish role, and that's it. It's good.
Is the bishop coming for confirmations? Or are you going to do confirmations?
He is coming for confirmations. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yep. But it doesn't matter. But yes, he's coming for confirmations. He often comes, he lumps his confirmation visit with the trustees meeting at Aquinas House, of which he is the president of the board of trustees. So he does the whole Hanover thing together.
Nice. So folks, as you are listening, take note that when you visit Hanover, New Hampshire, on a college visit with your kids, and you're looking to go skiing and hiking, make sure to bop in for the trustees meeting and for confirmations.
Only if you're a trustee or a confirmand.
If you heard it, Father Jacob Bertrand just uninvited you. Savage.
Just kidding. Everybody's invited. All right. Invitations to everyone. So today, what are we going to try? Here we are.
What are we doing?
We are going to talk about something a bit more serious. We're going to talk a little bit about the relationship between faith and mental health, faith and mental health, the relationship between those two, or the intersection of those two, or the lack of intersection between those two. And it probably goes without saying, but it is worth saying, that neither Father Gregory nor I are mental health professionals. Maybe professionals in the faith realm. I don't know if there's such, you know, we have some degrees in some things and minister. Yeah. So as much as that qualifies one to speak, but it doesn't. But what I think we want to, or what at least prompts the question or the topic, is the fact that faith and our mental health are in ways inseparable. You know, who we are as men and women. This is a bit perhaps modern or jargony, but we are holistic individuals. You know, what happens in our minds, our emotions, our attitudes, and dispositions, outlooks, whatever, however we want to lump things together and describe them, it has an impact on our faith, and our faith has an impact on who we are as men and women. You know, we can't atomize those things. And it's clear too, I think, from our experience, Father Gregory and myself, of working in the vineyard, of the apostolic work that we do, and then just like general sociological observation, that it has been a wild uptick in mental health conditions and challenges, especially amongst young people. So we thought that we'd look at like how it is that these two things interact, engage, and also don't, some caveats about like what we should, you know, kind of avoid or kind of just be on guard against. So that kind of sets the stage. Here we are yet again. Father Gregory, initial thoughts, to get us going a little bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of this will depend upon your anthropology. And when people hear the word anthropology, sometimes they think about a class that they were forced to take during their freshman year at State University of who cares. And they're like, really? Is this about me like kind of grubbing around in the oldie timey past, looking at cave art? It's like, no, I don't mean it in that sense. I mean, it depends upon what you understand by the human person or how you understand the human person to be or to act. And so, you know, like the church hasn't said the human person is in just this way and not another, because in a certain sense, it's a philosophical question. Right, we can benefit from the revelation of the Most High God and the way in which He mediates grace and how that corresponds to our human state. But like, what is man? That's a question that really we're kind of figuring out as a human community, and maybe doing it better or worse at different stages. So like, we're going to go on a particular anthropology, that which we kind of received as part of our patrimony in formation as Dominican friars. So it is defined by the church that we're composite beings, right, of body and soul. And a body is just, you know, the what we kind of understand by the material component. But the soul is what makes us to be what we are. It's what gives us life. And so you'll have various definitions of the soul kind of cropping up in the tradition. But we take this one from Aristotle, where he just says, you know, like, we call a thing a soul because it makes a thing to be alive. And, there's a more technical way to frame that. But what we're talking about with the soul isn't like a kind of spirit that haunts or inhabits a body, which is itself already kind of stably constituted or is already kind of fit for its own independent existence. No, we're just one thing. We're body and soul. The soul makes us to be alive. The body is what is made alive, right? And I think that that's super helpful, at least in kind of framing the conversation and coming to a deeper appreciation of how physically, emotionally, psychologically, and spiritually, there's a lot of interdependence, or there's a lot of ways in which the one will affect the other. So I think that might be a good place in which to kind of set off.
Yeah. And two, I think one thing, or a thing that a theme or a truth that we'll keep returning to, or at least alluding to, is this, I guess, basic foundational reality that whether or not mental, like an individual's or your mental health is wherever you want to like put it, on this sort of spectrum of good, things are great, healthy, firing on all cylinders, things are okay, you know, or things aren't that great. Wherever that spectrum is, we have to be careful as we continue this conversation to recognize that the interplay between who we are as men and women, our sort of chemical and mental makeup, doesn't have a bearing on our ability to pursue holiness, right? You can be in a really great spot mentally and not be living a life of virtue or a life in pursuit of Christ, or you might be, or even on the other end of the spectrum, be in a really tough spot and still be able to pursue Christ. You know, the sort of limits of our mental health capacity, is that a thing? Don't define one, Christ's love for us, but also our ability to pursue Him in and through the challenges that we face. So I think that's something, at least in my experience, working or chatting with people, whether it's in the confessional or outside of the confessional, that I think is really important to reiterate, that we don't conflate the two. You know, that we don't think that I have to have everything about who I am kind of like on the straight and narrow and perfect and ready to go before I can be loved by God and pursue God. So I like to also, you know, as we're talking about this composite body of what we are as men and women, but men and women who are, regardless of circumstance, available and able to pursue that invitation that Christ proffers us.
Yeah, and I think like a good way to kind of get at that insight is, all right, so we're made of body and soul, and the soul acts through, you know, certain voices in the tradition will say powers or capacities or faculties. And the main ones that we identify are the intellect and the will, and then the sense kind of perception. I mean, like the senses, and then the emotions, which kind of follow upon our sense engagement with reality. So there's probably a simpler way to describe that. Basically, a mind and a heart, and by heart, I mean kind of like all that goes into our will and our emotions. And so I think that like when you look at the human person on the basis of this picture that we have drawn, you can identify certain physical things, certain emotional things, certain psychological things, and then certain spiritual things. And the lower order things are in service of the higher order things. And sometimes the lower order things can pose obstacles to the good functioning of the higher order things, or sometimes they can facilitate the functioning of the lower order things. They can kind of dispose to it. And so I think that like at each stage, we're trying to establish, all right, like what's the goal here for this part of my life? But then how does it fit within the whole? So physically, you know, you want to be in good health. You want all of your whatever organs to work well. And if you have a problem, a physical problem, then that might pose an obstacle to emotional and psychological and spiritual flourishing, because it's going to be all consuming. Like, you know, people ask me why I have a dent in my forehead. I went like head to head with somebody playing soccer 12 years ago. And like when I had this big, huge bump before it was surgically reduced, I thought about it a lot. And that kind of like was an obstacle for me, you know, like emotionally or psychologically or spiritually, because I was just like fixated on it because I'm a vain human being. So I think that when we talk about this, we're talking about, all right, there are different aspects of our human life, the physical, the emotional, the psychological, and ultimately the spiritual, which is this, you know, innermost person, that kind of seat of choice whereby we choose for God to abide with God, but that the other things matter kind of as disposing to it or potentially posing obstacles to it. So I think that we're thinking about mental health, especially, you know, this kind of psychological and emotional dimension on those terms or along those lines.
Yeah. And that's that, as you're describing that, that's an interplay between, you know, who we are as a whole, right? We can't say that, yeah, I'm totally like physically broken and destitute, but like spiritually it's really contributing to make this easy. Like through trials and difficulties, we can certain, you know, the crosses that we carry in our lives, we can certainly, and do certainly, what have access to Christ in some pretty poignant and direct ways, but not as if we should search out sufferings, whether they be physical or emotional or mental, as ways to sort of encounter the suffering Christ. So that all makes sense, that we ought to pursue, as we do pursue like healthy physical bodies, also healthy minds too, then, and recognize that the health of our bodies, of our minds, do contribute and help also with the healthiness of our spiritual life and our relationship with God. So as we're thinking about this, then I think, well, before kind of changing or moving in this direction, I think it's something that we are taught in our formation as we're learning to, or at least pretending to learn, trying to learn to deal and interact with people in pretty vulnerable situations, whether that's, you know, in spiritual direction or conversation or the confessional, to, as priests, recognize the line of things that, you know, that where the line is drawn, that, you know, we are not mental health counselors, we're not therapists, we're not psychologists, psychiatrists. So not to sort of delve into those patient visit where we don't have expertise, which I think is sound advice, you know. So even just mentioning that anecdote and the thing that we're taught, I think draws a good distinction between, or at least begins to draw the distinction between, like what it is that we pursue within the sort of spiritual and faith world and what it is that we might pursue in a sort of therapeutic world. So I guess, and what are some, things that you notice here, good things, bad things, things to, that we should cling to or things that we should kind of avoid? Yeah, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, maybe just to follow on to your point and then expand upon it. For each, register of our humanity, there are people who are competent to help us to live well. So you think about like our physical health, we can consult doctors and nurses, we can consult dietitians and physical therapists, we can consult any number of professionals for whom, that's their competence. And so we want to look to those people to help us without becoming so consumed with the fixing of those problems that our desire to fix the problem becomes in turn a distraction, right? So like, I've been using the bump example. I had, an initial little kind of stitches, and then I had a first surgery, and then I had a second surgery. Now it's like my head's not flat, obviously. I could have had any number of further surgeries, but it's each time there's swelling and you have to wait to see if it will recover better. And, this plastic surgeon and that plastic surgeon. And also I'm a religious and we don't have the money to pay for it if it's out of network. So ... It's the type of thing where it's like, do I have a dent in my head? Yes. Is it the biggest deal in the world? No. Did it take me some time to come to that realization? Yes. But at this stage of the game, like this kind of imperfection in the physical order doesn't pose an obstacle to perfection in the spiritual order, because we can take everything from the lower order and make of it fodder for a higher order type of flourishing. So it's like, here's this obstacle. I want to address this obstacle in the ways that lie available to me, but God will never permit me to be tested beyond my strength, right? And then, ratcheting up to the next level, thinking about the emotional and the psychological, there are people who are competent in those matters. And we think about psychologists and psychiatrists and therapists and counselors and whomever else. And we want to work with them so as to address certain obstacles which might lie in our way. Now, there are greater obstacles and lesser obstacles. And we don't want to say like, I need to address every possible obstacle, because every human being is going to encounter some difficulty in this realm. But there's a lot that we can kind of take in stride, or there's at least some that we can take in stride. But if I become so fixated on those problems of an emotional and psychological nature that I have to kind of consult or, seek somebody else with greater competence in those matters so as to navigate them, right, then there's a kind of worry that then that becomes the goal, then that becomes the end of my life, because we want to be able to, again, like live in the spiritual order, look on those problems and say simply and kind of humbly, like, I don't really know what's going on. It seems like this could be going better. I'm going to make the best use of those people, to whom I have access. But I'm also going to be mindful of the fact that this isn't the whole of my life, right? And I don't want to make of this, in stressing over it, in obsessing over it, a further obstacle, as it were, to what matters. So I think that, yeah, I know like all of these formulations are somewhat imperfect, and I am conscious of the fact that, if left unsaid, some clarification might go unmentioned and leave people potentially confused. But I think the big thing is to recognize a kind of competence for each register. Like, we're competent for our lives. God has placed our lives in our hand. But sometimes he has it that we rely upon others to help us, right? Because we ourselves are somewhat compromised in our competence, or somewhat untrained in our competence. So we rely on others to help us to address those things in each register of our human life, navigate the various problems, but ultimately unto an end, which is, the vision of God in heaven, which is our full flourishing, which can incorporate all the lower kind of order goods in their turn.
Yeah, there's this, I've experienced this sort of kind of like dualistic phenomena of how people approach, seeking help, or these seeking what competent people to help, especially with mental health. And the, I guess on the one hand, this sort of, I guess I would say like overuse, over-reliance, where it's kind of like you're a thing to have a therapist or a counselor or whatever it might be. Like, it's just part of like everyday life, and that like it should be part, not that it is part of everyday life, but that it ought, like life ought to have these pieces to it. Life kind of seems like it just needs a counselor, and I'm just going to go through counselors and that sort of thing. Like an over-reliance and kind of not a flippancy, but a sort of casual approach to seeking out, that sort of help. Now, when I say that, I don't want to say that people shouldn't have therapists or counselors or psychiatrists, but I do think that it is when we seek, just like when we seek out a doctor, like an MD for help with a physical ailment, so too with like the mental, that this is, it's a serious thing. It's not just, oh, this is just part of what I do and that sort of thing. It's, you know, we're seeking to become more healthy. But the other side of it too is sometimes I think there's a great reticence to seek out help, you know, to find somebody to talk to or that sort of thing. And I think that can be unhelpful too, in the sense of like, sometimes it is just good to have somebody to talk to who's a professional who has competency, as you were saying, Father Gregory, in these areas, so as to seek some healthy movement in these areas. And I think what you were saying too really stands out to me. It was like, what is the goal? What is the goal here? Like, what are we after with respect to like a sound anthropological understanding from, you know, how we understand the truth of the human person with respect to our mental health? And I think that's what you were saying already, to be able to remove obstacles from our pursuit of Christ, from our flourishing in some regard here on this side of eternity. And I think as Catholics who have, you know, who have this fullness of truth in Christ, that we have to recognize what that looks like too. Like, it's easy to say, let's remove the obstacles, but sometimes the removal of those obstacles might simply be to learn how to deal better with the difficulties, the sadness, the anxiety, the depression, whatever the mental health thing might be. It might not be a getting rid of that, or maybe a mitigating of it, you know, but it's the goal here is not just to like have a sort of what, like, kind of laboratory exercise or sort of experiment and fixing our someone's mental health. But the goal, even in the pursuit of people, professionals in this area, is still Christ. It's still to pursue Christ. And I think when we lose sight of that, then, you know, help with our mental health or mental health becomes more convoluted, can become more of like the idol of like what we're kind of worshiping and after, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that, you know, on the basis of those last comments, I think there's, on the one hand, a kind of approach to mental health or an approach to mental health kind of consultation or clinicians on the one hand, and then our own approach towards life as informed by that. So like, what do you mean? Okay, Gregory, I think that we've seen a healthy kind of destigmatization of, you know, those who pursue psychological or psychiatric help of one sort or another, to the point where it's been normalized that one would speak about, you know, I'm going to the doctor, I'm going to the therapist, I'm going to the supermarket, almost as it were in a similar spirit. So I think it's good to have destigmatized mental health struggles in such a way that people can speak more openly, and as a result of which feel less, you know, pressure about the revelation thereof. But I think that in swinging away from a kind of hiddenness, maybe there's a risk of a kind of immodesty, because as you get closer and closer to the inmost person, right, there are certain secrets that we keep with God. And not to say that mental health strugglers are necessarily those secrets, but I think that there can be a kind of tendency to over extrovert or over manifest one's interior life, which might lead to, I think you're kind of gesturing in this direction, to a certain evanescence or to a certain insubstantiality in our relationship with God, because it's been all exteriorized, because it's been all made overt or manifest. And so, like, one way in which, just in conversations with people, I like to think about this issue is to make a distinction between what's happy, healthy, and holy, because you'll sometimes hear people say, like, we're all just trying to be happy, healthy, and holy. And I think it's important to distinguish how, and in each case, how, because we mean a variety of things by happy. And some people will mean by that, you know, having a kind of preponderance of positive emotions. I like to describe happiness in terms of fit. So I think that you can be happy in the sense of have a kind of confidence that you are where you ought to be, even while experiencing a good bit of negative emotions. Because it's a matter of, I have a meaning, I have a purpose, I'm in pursuit of that. And while I might encounter obstacles to it, and while those obstacles might make me sad or angry or otherwise, right, I can still be about my business. When it comes to healthy, then, I think we're talking especially about the physical, the emotional, the psychological, and that means addressing kind of maladaptive behaviors or maladaptive thoughts that will keep us from living our full, you know, physical, emotional, and psychological lives. So here, I think that mental health is at play, and very importantly so. I don't think that it's not at play when we talk about happy, because I think it could be of service in that type of thing. But then when we get to holy, right, we're really talking about the spiritual dimension as it draws upon the physical, the emotional, the psychological, but as it really comes to its fullness in the spiritual dimension, which is that place in which we believe, you know, we hope, we love, we cling to God because he reveals himself and because he begets his life in us and then capacitates us to respond. And ultimately, like you said at the beginning, regardless of how things are going kind of happiness and healthiness wise, we're always able to choose for a holiness which God gives. And I think that pursuit of holiness will often involve addressing obstacles of a physical, emotional, or psychological sort, but we shouldn't equate it with the addressing of obstacles of a physical or an emotional or psychological sort, because then we can start to tell ourselves the lie that I'll be holy just as soon as I fix this thing or that thing or the other thing. There's no just as soon as with holiness. It's always possible to choose for God, to persevere in that choice for God, and to ask God for the grace that we need in order to continue further up and further in. So that's just, I find that a helpful way.
Yeah. And what you said earlier too, with respect to the fact that God doesn't put things in our lives that we can't handle. You know, he doesn't put trials, difficulties, crosses in our lives for which he does not supply the grace to not just to endure, as if it's like, you know, we just have to get through like this painful, like whatever procedure at the dentist and it'll be over. But like through the difficulties, whatever they might be, in whatever shape, duration, intensity, whatever they might be, the Lord gives the grace not just to endure, but to be made holy in them. Not once they pass, not once they're solved, not once they're fixed, but to be made holy in them. And that's the case with physical suffering, physical illness, whatever it might be. But that's also the case with mental suffering and mental illness and you know, the mental crosses. And, you know, that as you were saying, Father, it's not let me fix this and then let me choose God. It's let me choose God and let him fix me or work on me. And what that means is make me holy, make me a saint, you know, make me into the image of the man or woman that he has created me to be, in and through the particulars of my life, the particulars of my sufferings, the particulars of my joys, whatever they might be. I think that's super important. And as I've already said, and as you've said, when we begin to lose sight of that, of what the purpose and the goal and what we're after, when we begin to lose sight, we just become even more, I think, lost, or it becomes more convoluted, or, you know, the purpose of like, why even bother working on this or that in my life begins to make a lot less sense if it's not, you know, for that last bit, that pursuit of holiness.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that at the end of the day, one has a goal, and either the goal is God or it's other than God. And I think it can be tempting to have for the goal of our lives, physical health or emotional health or psychological health. But they're not the goal. That doesn't mean that they can't be important means, but they should always be treated as means. Now, a means can be an intermediate end. People at this point are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Regardless, moving on. So it's just to say that, like, the goal is Christ. And in keeping Christ between our navigational beacons, we'll come to discover, like, oh, wow, you know, here's a bluff, or, oh, wow, you know, here's a sandbar, or, oh, wow, here's a strange buoy, like things that you might have to navigate around or avoid or otherwise, you know, take into account. But you have Christ between your navigational beacons, and so you're able to proceed apace. You're able to advance towards the horizon of your homing. And it helps you to clarify what's going on in the process. Because otherwise, we're just kind of like, you know, joyriders. And we're like, ooh, let's do this, and ooh, let's do that. And we might kind of be faddish about what we pursue, unless it's disciplined by an overall goal, like a purpose and meaning, which is to say a relationship with the Most High God, which can give definitive shape and then help us also to understand what's to be endured, like what's to be suffered, and then what's to be pushed back against, what's to be rectified in the here and now. Like, what should we have patience with, and what should we, you know, be a little bit impatient with as God gives us grace to be.
There you go. Was that your final thought? I was going to ask any final thoughts, but
I think that might be my final thought. Yeah.
Okay. Well, if you have more later, just log back in, and we can add a B-side to this episode.
Nice.
There you go. Great. Thanks for listening to this episode of God's Planning. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you can do so through Patreon by following the link in the description. Thanks to all of our supporters, as always. You can also follow the links in the description to shop Godsplaining merchandise and get information about upcoming Godsplaining retreats and events. Know of our prayers for you. Please pray for us. And until next time, God bless.